It's 6:20. This is KERA News. I'm Justin Martin. Today in Arlington, officials broke ground on a project that General Motors says will help it build SUVs more efficiently across the highway. A new supplier park is being built for the companies that make parts for the SUVs built at the GM assembly plant. As KERA's Christopher Connolly reports, the supplier park will replace a defunct mall in the middle of Arlington.
Heaping piles of concrete and metal are all that's left of the old Six Flags Mall. Big earth-moving machines are hauling away the rubble so that new construction can begin on the two giant buildings that'll make up the new supplier park. Right now, GM makes its biggest SUVs in Arlington, but it gets parts for those vehicles from all over the place. When the supplier park is built, companies can manufacture and warehouse components within view of the factory. Steve Miller runs International Automotive Components, which will be the main tenant of the 1.2 million square foot development. He listed off all kinds of pieces that his company supplies to GM.
The instrument panel, the complete cockpit, the center console, door panels, overhead systems, and flooring and acoustics. Essentially the entire vehicle interior. And that will be manufactured here.
The new development is expected to add about 850 new jobs to Arlington. Most of those will be transferred from Mexico or elsewhere outside the U.S., according to General Motors. The carmaker currently employs more than 4,000 people at its Arlington plant, and it's in the middle of a billion-dollar expansion. Mayor Jeff Williams said the new supplier park is just another win for his city.
It enables us to redevelop a piece of property that was no longer economically viable, transforming an old mall site into a logistics center that is projected to generate $151 million in taxable sales and purchases over the next decade.
Several Arlington officials were on hand for the announcement. Also in attendance was Senator Ted Cruz, who crowed about jobs and the Texas economy.
You know, Texans like to buy SUVs. We buy a lot of them. And it makes Texans very, very happy that those SUVs are built here in Texas by Texans.
The Arlington City Council approved more than $13 million in tax incentives over the next 10 years to help get the development built. Construction is expected to be completed in 2018. Christopher Connolly, KERA News.
At the groundbreaking ceremony in Arlington today, Senator Ted Cruz weighed in on the ongoing investigation into Russian interference in U.S. elections and possible Russian ties to President Trump's campaign. Former FBI Director Robert Mueller was named a special counsel to head up that investigation. Cruz said that in the past, special counsels have gone adrift when they allowed their scope of inquiry to become too broad.
I do think Bob Mueller is a good and honorable man, and so that I hope he will focus on his specific assignment and not allow it to turn into just a far-ranging fishing expedition or political attack.
The Washington Post is reporting that Mueller and his team are looking into whether the president tried to obstruct justice by firing FBI Director James Comey. The Trump administration issued a pair of controversial statements on immigration last night, a mix of good and bad news for undocumented immigrants living in the U.S., and Tuesday is National Refugee Day, all of which makes the Bruce Wood Dance Project's new work about the refugee experience especially timely. It's called Chasing Home, and dancer Albert Drake choreographed it with the help of a $70,000 grant. Today in State of the Arts, he talked to Art and Seek's Ann Bothwell about making his second major work.
Albert Drake, welcome to the KERA Newsroom.
Thank you, thank you.
You set out to make a dance that speaks to the experience of refugees. Do you have a personal experience with that?
There's a bit of a connection, not necessarily in a refugee experience, but more of an immigration experience, and that's just coming from my own family. My mother's side of the family are immigrants from Mexico. There's just a difference between immigration and refugee. One's a little less of a choice, mm-hmm. right? There's a little less of a choice of where to go and when to go. But that experience of leaving one's home and for potential, trying to find a start where they wouldn't find elsewhere, you know, is, and the stories that my mom would tell me of growing up and that kind of hardship of staying under radars. And so those are the type of things that I would try to hone in on and try to put myself in the shoes of. There's only so far that can go. So that's where other research just kind of came in.
What are you hoping that your audience takes away from this performance?
If I can get them to just think about those people, you know, right? The refugee, anybody who's been displaced, anybody who's had their culture, their community, their livelihood stripped away from them, just, even if it's just to think about it, kind of putting yourself in those shoes. If I can do just that, then that's all I'm trying to do.
How did you get started dancing?
I believe I was just about to turn 16. And
that's kind of late for dancers.
Yeah, it's a little late. I've kind of been around it. My older sister, she danced in middle school, high school, and she used to have to babysit me. And so I would always kind of have to sit in on these rehearsals, like on the weekends or during the summer times. And when I got to high school, the dance director was my sister's dance director. But I was big into hip hop. And so that's kind of where my love of dance and music came from. So one day, it was right after my sophomore year, she asked if I would teach hip hop to her summer kids. And when we started that summer, I was ended up sitting and watching classes, just first ballet classes ever watched. And one day the ballet teacher, she came up to me with a bag, and I looked in it, and it had like dance belts and, you know, leotards and tights and shoes. And she's like, go put these on, go come take class. 8 years later, here we are.
Bruce Wood, the company's founder and choreographer, passed away in 2014. You were an original member mm-hmm. of the company, so you've got to be thinking about him as you kind of head into this weekend and this big premiere.
Yeah, absolutely. My dad passed away a few years before he did, and he kind of filled those shoes afterwards. I started dancing with his company right after my dad passed. Just so many things reminded me of my dad, their being, their perspective, their work ethics, their ambitions. I kind of latched on to that type of mentorship. And so I think about him to this day. There's a little bit of a balance that I'm now searching is what would Bruce do, but also tell myself, don't do what Bruce did, because I don't want to make myself a clone of. Now that I'm really exploring myself as a choreographer, I mean, I am different from him.
Albert Drake, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you.
Both Jessica Shaduck and Rachel K. Dish grew up learning about World War II from their European grandparents. There was one big difference, though, in the stories they heard. K. Dish's grandparents were Holocaust survivors. Shaduck's were Nazis. Today on Think, Chris Boyd talked with the two novelists about how they navigated their family's histories and formed a friendship. Here's Jessica Shaduck.
Talking about this time and, from my point of view, talking about the German experience of and enabling of the Holocaust is totally like walking through a minefield, because there are so many things that could be interpreted wrong, or that you could, I think there's a real feeling people are so afraid to talk about it. And there are also such huge feelings that are contained in this topic. And I was struck when Rachel and I started talking about this, how freeing it was to sit down with someone and say, we both were feeling that way.
I mean, I grew up being told by my grandfather that I couldn't trust anyone who wasn't Jewish. Mm. And I think he said that in a way he wanted to protect his grandchildren. He wanted us to be ready. But I didn't, I was a kid, you know, I didn't want to live in that world. I mean, I'm not naive about anti-Semitism. And if things happen, you have to acknowledge what's really happening. But I was not ready to just say I couldn't trust people. So it's very important to me to have these conversations and have them across these lines. It makes me feel safer in the world. You know, I could have the conversation with other Jewish people, but that doesn't make the world a safer place. Reaching out across lines makes the world a safer place, I think.
This episode of Think Rears tonight at 10, and you can listen to the podcast at think.kera.org. A heat advisory is in effect for most of the listening area until 7 tomorrow night. This evening, you can expect partly cloudy skies with a low around 78. It's 6:30. This is KERA News.